Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Of course, Wednesday means that Jason Caldwell from inside the Auburn Tigers, AUTigers.com, is with us here in the WOW Business Studio. Dan's making his way into the building right now. And then Drew at the controls here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive, where hour number one of The Drive is brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And also the sponsor of our hotline, where we welcome guests when they can't be with us here in the Wild Business Studio. And, of course, all of your calls, 334-321-1390. We'd love for you to join in here on this hump day. Braves up one game as they win the opener last night. Jumped out to an early lead, knocking out Framber Valdez. Jorge Soler doing something hard to believe that had never been done in the history of the World Series, and that is the leadoff batter of the series homering.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable to see that stat flash up last night and you go, 117 times.
Yeah, you thought that somebody
somewhere along the way somebody mm-hmm. would have done that.
But you know, I guess for the first 80 plus, leadoff batters were singles guys.
Absolutely.
You know, you didn't have power hitters at the top of the order.
You didn't really get to it until Ricky Henderson, probably.
Right.
He was probably the first one, and you know the way he did it, I would have thought somewhere along the line he might have done that.
Yeah, the
A's
were in a few series.
Yes, he might have done that at some point, but no.
Nope, never had happened. And then the Braves also becoming the first team ever to score in the first three innings of the series. They got two in the first, one in the second, two in the third. And the last two, the rocket shot, I mean the laser hit by Adam Duvall was the end of the night for Valdez. And it was almost all good. But tough, tough news. Charlie Morton on a shot back to the box that he played and then stayed in and threw a couple of 96 mile an hour fastballs.
Had a couple of strikeouts in the mix.
Turns out he has a fractured tibia.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable to see that. But it's you're up 1-0, but that's a huge loss.
No question about it.
for a team that did not have a ton of starting pitching.
Yep. Now, Max Fried goes tonight, and if the Braves can get a win, though, tonight, then I think they can get by without Charlie Morton. But, I mean, it's crazy to say if it's 1-1 going back to Atlanta that it's still probably slight advantage Houston just because of the loss of Charlie Morton.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. You're right. You've got, I think, an advantage tonight. You definitely have a confidence advantage. I mean, I mean, the couple of defensive plays in the first three or four innings of that game probably make the difference in Houston being, it being 6-5 in the seventh inning and having a chance. I mean, there were a couple of those really, really good defensive plays that took away runs and kept it from being, could have been 3-2 in the first inning.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, those were really big plays.
Even if the you can introduce.
Hey Dan.
Hey everybody. Even if the Braves can get it to 2-0 going back to Atlanta, it's not going to be easy necessarily because Houston every individual
right.
timeout, there are matchups to consider. But yes, being able to win last night.
2-0 going back to Atlanta. It will be a madhouse.
Absolutely. You know, it's going to be, well, I think no matter what happens tonight, you're going to see, yeah, you know, one of the great atmospheres in baseball this weekend, I suspect.
Yeah, it already is when you consider that there's people that are flying to Houston to go to the game just because it's cheaper to get a flight, a hotel room, all that stuff than it is to get a ticket.
To find a ticket. Well, and I said this yesterday, Jason. I do think that the fanaticism, the excitement from Braves fans is more than most baseball teams have because of where this is. Because this is football country, college football country, and I think the fans who are familiar with football fanaticism, especially college football fanaticism, they're tailgating, they're partying, they're doing things that you don't see at other major league stadiums.
And it's something that we've talked about before. When you consider, you know, you think about going to Arkansas for a football game. Everybody in the state's an Arkansas fan. Go to LSU for a football game. Everybody in the state. When you think about the Braves, everybody within 600 miles, for the most part,
the majority of folks grew up
watching the Braves.
I believe it's still true that geographically the closest National League park to the Braves is Cincinnati. Like that's how much of the South is Braves country. And you know, I think that yes, the region helps as far as what kind of atmosphere you're going to see this weekend. I'm not going to discount the importance.
No, I'm not saying it is all important, but I think it's something that fans are sort of used to, the kind of game prep and reactions during games.
Certainly, but I think an important factor in why you're going to see the kind of atmosphere you're going to get this weekend is because it's been 20 plus years. Any fan base that's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm. Especially one that prides itself on winning.
Sure, but I think even if the Pirates have done it, which is not a franchise you associate with winning.
Not for a long time.
No, if they were in the World Series.
Yeah, can you imagine what you'd see there in Pittsburgh? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think, but yes, the fact that the Braves, compared to Houston, who have done so much winning in the postseason over the last 5-6 years, it's very novel to have gotten this far in Atlanta. And yet, no matter what happens tonight, they're going into, Houston's going into a hornet's nest this weekend in Atlanta, and if Max Fried can win and the Braves are within a game or two of the World Series in that three-game stretch this weekend, yeah, it's only going to ratchet it up even more.
Think about the options for people to follow Major League Baseball teams within 500 miles of Houston.
Yeah, in every direction, right? Northeast and west.
Yeah, but, right. Yeah. I mean, that's the difference. Yes. You know, like, you've got such a wide birth of people that, I mean, there's people that all over Arkansas, you know, Louisiana, that have grown up Braves fans, and for them, here you go, you get a chance to go watch a World Series game, and they're poning it up now.
So a few observations about last night's game I wanted to make. One, and Scott Bagwell, if we need to, can vouch for me on this. I thought Morton was hurt as soon as the comebacker hit his leg.
I thought he should have been. He didn't act like it then.
No, the way he pitched would make you think he wasn't hurt, but right, he was moving around really kind of gingerly, but then he was throwing 96-mile-an-hour fastballs and striking out Jose Altuve on a broken leg.
If you've ever had, I've had some line drives adrenaline off the shin. Well, yeah, but it's adrenaline, but you can get an immediate knot the size of a baseball there, but be okay. And, you know, I didn't see the knot, so I wondered, man, that ball seemed to hit him pretty solid, and it turns out it hit him too solid.
Yeah, when he left the game, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe there's a chance that it's just a bruise and swelling.
Nah,
and
he wasn't going to leave the game with a bruise.
Well, if it was really, really painful, I mean, maybe he's back later in the series, or maybe it's something broken and he needs to, and he's going to have to be out for a while. And unfortunately, it's the latter, and he's not going to
really
be there.
Shame.
But it was, the way he pitched after getting hurt is, I mean, it joins Matzik, right, with some of the most incredible things you've ever seen in the baseball postseason, especially from a pitcher. And as far as the bats for Houston last night, I thought more than once they had a home run that's a ballpark that's a home run in every other ballpark, but because it's Houston and it's a miniature golf course designed to look like a baseball stadium.
Well, you got to pull the ball.
Well,
they
the last single where he gets thrown out at second base, That's a home run.
Everywhere but Fenway, right?
It's probably a home run in Fenway because Fenway is a smaller wall right there.
Sure.
And maybe it was close enough. Shorter wall.
Yes,
and it's smaller in terms of the length. Shorter.
Right. It wasn't due left. It was like left center.
That ball was hammered. I mean, that ball goes 400 feet and it's 410
I would
feet.
They said on the broadcast, 28 of 30 stadiums, that ball's a home run. I'd be interested to know the other park other than Houston where it's not going, maybe
Colorado.
Because he destroyed that ball, and there was another really well hit ball that hit high off the wall for Houston.
I think about too, like I said, the couple of plays that Albie's made where they just smoke balls mm-hmm. into the outfield. Yeah. I mean, they hit the ball really hard. They really did, and it was interesting to see. It was one of those games where that's the way baseball is.
The Braves really hit the ball hard too.
but they hit in the right spot.
Right. The one where Duvall hit off the wall. Where he physically was chasing the ball and he hits off the center field wall, which that one's
the triple,
the triple from the big fella is one of the that's another one. Alvarez, right, was one of the other balls where that thing was just crushed and a lot. It's interesting to see that with the home team, right, to see their ballpark playing against them. Usually you'd think the visitors team, but and Houston hits the ball well enough that maybe they don't have to make those decisions about he's. Maybe his game isn't fine tuned to all our ballpark, but they were inches away at times from huge hits, and it just didn't pan out. And now all the pressure's on the Astros now.
And again, game two, you can hear it right here on ESPN 106.7 tonight. Pregame will be at 6:30, and then first pitch shortly after 7:00. So stay tuned for that. You can tell it is a big deal that we're talking baseball when Auburn has as big a ball game as they have had at this time of year. Jason, we've talked about it all week. Ole Miss coming in as a number 10 team. You'll probably be able to think of this quickly. When was the last time a ranked Auburn team played a top 10 team down the stretch from Halloween on other than Georgia or Alabama?
Other than Georgia or Alabama?
It's been a little while.
I don't know. It would have been Florida in one of those games, 2007 Florida. But I don't know if Auburn was even ranked.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I found a David Pascal caliber stat that sort of indicates how unique this matchup is Saturday night. Auburn and Ole Miss have been playing every year since the implementation of division play in 92. Every odd-numbered year it's at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Right.
This is the first time both teams have been in the top 25. When they play at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
You know how many times Auburn and Ole Miss have been ranked ever playing each other?
It's a handful, right?
Two.
It's two. I think
two.
One of them was recent, right? 14,
2014 and 70-something.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time in division
two
play.
Two times in history.
Wow.
And it's not like they played it, but they have played 44 times.
I wonder if that's true with Auburn and any other team in the West, that they've never both been in the top 25, or at least here in Auburn, when they play.
LSU and Ole Miss are the two teams that Auburn plays the least. Mm-hmm. That Auburn has played the least out of the original group.
Right. Started playing those when we went to divisions.
Yeah,
in 92.
And so there would be obviously LSU is going to have more of those, but most of those games have been early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss has been traditionally later in the year. Mississippi State's traditionally been earlier in the year.
And they haven't been in the top 25 very much. In the division era.
No. So it is. I mean, this. There's no question. This is a huge ball game for both programs. Ole Miss wins this game on the road. Why shouldn't they have a chance of going 11-1?
And a playoff team.
Yes.
People forget that one now. Their only loss is to Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
Right.
You start talking about the potential of, say, Alabama wins out, whatever happens. If they don't win, Auburn beats Alabama. And then Georgia runs the table. Ole Miss is the second SEC team, if that's the case, as long as they don't lose.
If they're 11-1, they've got a great shot.
I mean, it is a big game, no question about it, when you start talking about what it means for both programs. But if you're Auburn, you start talking about,
Auburn, take care of business. You're playing for the SEC West,
and not out of the playoff
running
either.
You don't have to have
either.
Any help. No, that's right.
Not out of the playoff running either. No.
And something else that this game brings up that you've seen more, I feel like, this year than obviously last year because of the restrictions, but even in the years before last season, Ole Miss is a team in the top 25, and they're They're going on the road, and they're the underdog against a team that is well behind them in the polls.
In the rankings.
Just like we saw when Oregon was an underdog in the Rose Bowl this weekend against UCLA. They ended up winning that game. Oklahoma State was in the top 25. They were an underdog at Iowa State.
And lost
that game. I mean, there's something about maybe it's the value of home field this year in the aftermath of last season. Maybe it's just parity in college football that these teams – outside of the top five aren't that much better than teams just out of the top 25.
You don't even have to say outside the top five. You can say outside the top one.
Yeah.
At the moment, maybe one and a half.
What was A&M ranked when Alabama played that game?
Absolutely. Look at Oklahoma. They have done nothing to show that that's a team that's worthy of play other than they've won games.
Yep.
That's it.
They've shown that they can almost lose, that they are about to lose every game. To their credit, they haven't.
It's Houdini, right? I mean,
it really is.
It's a magic act. It's an escape act there at Lincoln Riley's working on there in Norman.
We're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive. Jason Caldwell from inside the Auburn Tigers, AUTigers.com. Bill, Dan, and Drew here in the WOW Business Studio. I saved that for you.
Hey, thanks. You can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com.
Mention the phone line that we'd love for you to join us on, or you can text us on the Drive text box, which is 334-564-1840, and the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, an Alabama-based firm offering incredible opportunities for students seeking a great career without attending a four-year college. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more.
Definitely want to give a shout-out to Southeastern Industrial Contractors, welcoming them into the fold with the Drive, and because we don't do it enough. Tell folks how they can hear the show, right? You got ESPN 106.7, and we're thrilled to be on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3. On 98.3.
Absolutely, on that powerhouse stick that you can pick up throughout Central and then into the upper and lower regions of Alabama.
I tell potential advertisers across the state.
Yes.
And I feel like that's not even misleading to say that's where we are with 98.3. And if you're outside of the listening range, you can, of course, stream the show on ESPNAU.com. We're live from 4 to 6 every weekday.
And we need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Phone lines are open. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. As we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
Football's here. Get out the playbook with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. It is the Wednesday edition. Well, that makes sense. It's Wednesday. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in the WOW Business Studio. And we'd love for you to join in. Your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. As we've been saying, huge ball game coming up at Jordan-Hare Stadium this Saturday night. Jason and I were just talking about the weather forecast. Well, it's because I'm an old guy. I mean, I talk about the weather anyway. But no, I mean, I was thinking it looked like perfect, I thought, football weather yesterday when I looked at it, because it was talking about highs in the 50s and low by the end of the game in the 40s, but there was no mention of rain. But you've messed that up.
Yeah, now it's obviously it's supposed to storm late tonight, early tomorrow morning, rain some during the day, then turn cool. Friday's 54-49 right now with a 39%
chance of rain. It's going to be chilly all day, but yeah, I don't like the chance of rain.
Saturday, 57-50 with a 33% chance of rain. But it's a few showers early, the overcast skies later. Hopefully that means it's going to be gone.
Yeah, hopefully it's nice.
And there's not much rain in the Sunday forecast, right?
No, so it's supposed to warm back up Sunday to 66. But yeah, so you know, maybe that rain gets out of there. It's 50 degrees.
Overcast and chilly.
Which would be, you know, especially if the wind's still blowing.
Halloween.
That'd be all right.
Why not?
I'll take that.
I would say, but you know what though? Because it's been a while since Auburn's had a night game, I would prepare for sort of a colder atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and maybe even at your tailgate this weekend if you're going to be.
Well, if the high is going to be in the mid 50s and there's a chance of rain and a little bit of breeze, yeah, it's going to be pretty cool.
You know what though? But I saw a lot of folks this weekend in like cowboy attire that didn't really seem to fit, you know, a chilly climate. So yeah, I would just
past weekend.
I would just tell folks to have a heads up, be ready for it to get maybe a little bit colder this weekend.
Now
and it's not daylight savings as we discussed.
No, it's
yesterday.
Not. It's the following weekend.
It does make me think about it, though. This is there's games that you remember. We were just talking about ranked teams and how this late in the season, 89, other than this first one since 89 that we can find after,
right. Around Halloween and on.
Yeah, and that was the Shane Wasdin game.
Ooh, sure was.
Yeah, the 89 game. 87, Auburn, Florida, is still probably top five atmosphere all time for me. Kerwin Bell,
mm-hmm.
Emmett Smith. I still remember the Tiger Rag shirt that day that had Boo Gators on it, and it was in orange and blue. But that was a very wild atmosphere. Auburn won 29-6 that night and just dominated the game because that was the last 89 was the last opportunity, but Emmett was a freshman 87.
Right.
And had come in and had already lit up pretty much everybody. That atmosphere I remember distinctly being off the charts because it was Halloween night.
And then Sunday will be the 7-year anniversary of the last time these two teams played in the top 25 at all, which was the game in Oxford in 2014, which may have been, it gets overshadowed by the end of the 2013 season. I'm not sure how many Gus Malzahn Auburn games were more thrilling the Auburn Ole Miss game in 2014 that ends with Treadwell.
Laquan Treadwell.
Laquan Treadwell. Casanova McKenzie recovers the fumble in the end zone. But even that's unfortunate, not just because of the devastating injury to Treadwell, but because there were so many incredible plays in that game leading up to that ending.
It got remembered for one play.
And it gets remembered for one play, kind of like a couple of the games at the end of 2013, where there are highlights galore throughout that Auburn-Ole Miss game in 2014. If you haven't watched it in a while, or go back and look at it. I mean, it's some incredible football on both sides. And then, that terrible play that goes Auburn's way, but they're at the end. That's a memorable Auburn-Ole Miss game. We were talking during the commercial break about the 03 game, which was Eli Manning just had his jersey retired this weekend at Ole Miss. That was one of his finest moments in an Ole Miss jersey was the game in Auburn in 2003 where they come back and they win, and seems like Auburn has a chance there at the end. Campbell and Ben Obamanu go down the field, and Auburn is unable to cash in there at the end. But there have been some great ones in a series where it's pretty uncommon for both of these teams to be in the hunt late in the season.
Very uncommon.
There have still been some great. You got one, Bill. You got an Auburn Ole Miss game that comes to mind in the annals of your Auburn. I know we took the best ones, but
you want one of the worst ones was an Auburn win was 1990. We've talked about that one before. The hottest game I've ever been to in my life.
No question. Coach Dye, to the end, he always said that's the hottest football day he can remember. And this is somebody that grew up in Georgia playing football,
South Georgia,
where they
right.
gave him salt tablets and no water to drink. And he's like, that day still sticks out to him as a day. I remember another one. 84 when Auburn basically said we're going to run the ball every play, and they just ran. It was 42-0, 49-0, something like that. About 400 yards rushing that night.
I've got another one. I mean, the wild shootout of Pat Sullivan and Archie Manning in the Gator Bowl after the 70s season was unbelievable. Archie's playing with a cast.
With a cast
on his arm, and he's running around. People that complain about Bo running around, got to watch some Archie.
I remember watching that highlights of that game and not too long ago, and seeing him where nobody could tackle him.
No, nobody at all.
And run all over the place.
So Saturday will also be the 12-year anniversary of the 09 game, which was a big turnaround for Gene Chizik's first team. They had just gotten beaten really badly at LSU the week earlier. They were sort of on the ropes, and they come back and they play really well against a ranked Ole Miss team at home. That's the game where Zach Etheridge suffers the neck injury.
Oh, that's the
2009 Auburn Ole Miss game, and that one, maybe I'll try to track down our old buddy Chris Todd and talk a little bit this week. But
that'd be cool.
Yeah, because that was a memorable game in the annals of this one. And that one, they were both coming off.
Yeah, Auburn was unranked still, but Ole Miss was 24th. And, you know, that Auburn ended up, you know, they ended up 8-5 with a win in a bowl game, but they kind of had played pretty good and then had, you know, three straight losses there in the middle of the season.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone, and Slack is up first. Hey, Slack.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Slack. How you doing, Slack? Great to hear from you.
Y'all seen the article in USA Today about Kentucky and the lap dance?
No, I have not.
Not the University of Kentucky, but I guess some Kentucky high school coaches.
Oh, no, I did. Is that the one where they was it high school coaches, or was it rented a bus? Was that it?
I don't know if it was a bus involved.
Okay,
I just caught a little bit of it, and I'm like, what in the world's going on here?
Yeah, well, we've got a break coming up. I'm gonna check that out during the break.
Okay. Methodically, I like to see Auburn just run the ball. Said,
I hopefully successfully. I mean, I don't want to see Auburn run, punt. I mean, you'd like to be.
I want to see them run, score. Braves baseball game last night. I was glad to see Atlanta win. I hope Atlanta goes ahead and wins it because of. All-Star game was taken out of Atlanta. You know, I hope they go ahead and win it just because of that. But, you know, they did it for a reason, but I hope they go ahead and win it because of that. Do you see any of the young guys that we got, what, 4 games before you can lose your
redshirt?
Do you see any young guys that get a chance to play Saturday?
I think we got a break coming up. We'll talk about that when we come back. There's maybe a few guys I think we could see moving forward. So that we can talk about that maybe after the break.
And, of course, we'll get Jason's thoughts. We really haven't gone, you know, much in-depth at all on the matchup. What Auburn, you know, needs to be concerned with, what they need to do on Saturday. We'd love for you to join in, too, just – a quarter of the way in, halfway through with our time with Jason Caldwell, though. So come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
And 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 4:33, 27 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell. Taking your calls, questions, comments on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. And we ran short on time before you had a chance to get to Slack's question about possibly seeing some younger guys with the 4-game redshirt rule.
Yeah, I think you look, and to me it makes more sense to think about defense just because the number of plays. They played 91 plays against Arkansas. A ton of plays. You still got Ole Miss. You still got Alabama. You still got Mississippi State.
That's three teams that can run an awful lot of plays.
And can throw it. Mississippi State will throw it 70 times.
Yes.
That makes me think pass rushers. That makes me think guys off the edge. You think right now, who knows if we'll see T.D. Moultrie again. If we do, then that would be huge for Auburn. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you start thinking about where you go with a third or fourth guy, you know, fifth guy, sixth guy. And could we see Dylan Brooks? I wouldn't say never say never for a guy like that to see what he can do. I think the same thing with Nick Curtis, the walk-on from Hoover that was really good in the spring.
Yeah, when we saw him, too, in practice, I mean, he looked really good.
I think those are two guys that we could potentially see in a maybe third downs in a third quarter to give some guys some breaks, do some of those things. I still think a Lee Hunter sighting is going to come. I still think he's a guy that somewhere along the line on that defensive line is a guy that you know that you might get some reps for moving forward. Tavarius Dawson, wide receiver.
I'm still surprised we haven't.
I think for him, had he not gone through injury, whatever it was early in camp, he wasn't an early guy, so he wasn't here in January. Mm-hmm. Then he had that setback. It's hard to catch up when you get into game weeks. Because they're game planning.
But
they're
you never know with an open date.
That's
that
the thing.
Sometimes is a great opportunity for some young guys to catch coaches.
Absolutely. And so I think he's a guy that potentially, you know, especially wide receiver. But Auburn's coming off its best game of wide receivers and what they did against Arkansas. But that I think those are a couple of guys that I think potentially could be guys that you look at. That, those are guys for me. Maybe he's not a young guy, but maybe a guy like Dershawn Miller, maybe he takes a step forward and maybe gets in the rotation.
I was going to ask if you expand it to newcomers rather than just true freshmen. Like, you know, could, do you think maybe Drayshon or even Roe Torrance, maybe you see more of them?
Seeing a little bit of Roe lately.
We've seen a little more of him, and I really believe, and we talked about this, I really believe his value for this team could be if they end up sliding him inside some. Because of his size, he could be a, you know, you look, he could be a legit hybrid guy with his size, but have corner skills. That could be a valuable matchup when you start thinking about, you know, the teams you got. I mean, this weekend against Ole Miss, I mean, their receivers are big and physical guys, 6'2", 200, 6'2", 225. Now think about Alabama with the tight end group that they've got, athletic with Billingsley and some of those guys, having somebody like that. Maybe that's something. I don't know that. It's just a guess.
Do you get the sense that he could hold up against the run?
I think he'd be
an inside guy, because I feel like Ole Miss in particular, one of the ways they have that success is by always threatening the run. Right, on every single play, you got to account for that.
But if it's not him, then it's your nickel, and it's a guy that weighs 185 pounds, or it's whoever it is. He's got more size than any of those other guys.
Or it's a bigger guy who could be a liability in coverage.
Correct. To me, he gives you a little bit of the best of both worlds. So just throwing stuff against a wall. But that's a few guys maybe that potentially could see a little more of.
So something we noticed after the Arkansas game was that of the true freshmen, maybe there's – well, not just of the true freshmen, of everyone since the decision to replace Cornelius Williams with Eric Keesaw as the receivers coach, there's nobody – who's seen a bigger change in their role than Landon King, right? As far as a guy who goes from practice squad to being thrown the ball on multiple third downs. I mean, what do you make of the move Landon King
has
made?
Out there on the first snap of the game.
Yeah, I think it's a guy that, as the season has gone along, maybe those opportunities aren't there if the guys were playing great. But all of a sudden they go, well, who's catching the football? First of all, who's catching the football? Second of all, who's going out there every day showing us that he's ready to get out there and earn them? Landon King's been the guy, and he's caught the football. He's done some good things, and I think a guy that gives you one of those matchup, you know, situations that you've been, you know, dealing with for other teams the past few years.
Do we know who he's like? Is he practicing as a receiver? Like, do we? I mean, that's something sort of a mystery.
I think he's still with the tight end group. But those guys flex out and do some different things. I think it's probably a little bit of a hybrid role that where he does a little, and that's what they want. And that may have been part of it. They may have said, look, until we can get him to where he's learning that role as that wide receiver, then is he better than our tight end group? No. But now that you put him in both roles, what is he? Then he brings something extra to the table. That may have been it, you know, as simple as that.
Jason, while we've got the opportunity, let's talk a little bit about the challenges that Ole Miss brings. And, I mean, you've got to start offensively. Defensively, all right, we can go through this quickly. Defensively, they're improved from last year, but they still struggle at times on that side of the ball.
They do. Probably the biggest difference for them has been rushing the passer. Mm-hmm. You know, they got some guys that
they'll get after a quarterback.
And it's, you know, you look at the front of their defense and Sam Williams from Montgomery, KD Hill from Eufaula. They've got some Alabama flavor to that defense. Those guys they're going to be ready to play. But you look at them, and other than last week against LSU, where once again LSU fell into the trap of about middle of the first quarter going, man, we got nothing to play for. And they just kind of went into a shell after that because they ran the ball early.
Yeah, they did. I mean, the first two drives.
They were running the football, until they went for it on fourth down. That was it.
Yep.
Game changed. It was over with. But, you know, Alabama, Tennessee, you know, Arkansas had 300 yards. The other ones had – they gave up, you know, 800 yards or so rushing in three games. They played LSU last weekend. This is a stretch now of five straight weeks for them against physical football teams. I think that's where, you know, Slack wanted to see Auburn run it. I think you're going to have some opportunities to run it this week. You look at this defense, though, and, you know, they've given up some plays, but they pressure and try to create some issues.
Right.
But I think you say, again, just like Arkansas, stay ahead of the chains, and then Auburn's going to have an opportunity there. So, but, yeah, you switch gears to offense and you go –
Man, you can take your pick. A lot to be concerned with.
You can take your pick of what to talk about. Matt Corral, 15 touchdowns, one interception, leading rusher on this team.
Yeah, he's leading rusher, leading at least he was going into the game, had the most carries, had the most rushing attempts, and he's got nine rushing touchdowns.
Well, he's still there. He's still the leading rusher in terms of attempts and yards and tied with Snoop Connor with nine touchdowns. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that, you know, is concerning when you look at what Arkansas was able to do. Quarterback run was a big deal. Arkansas had a ton of yards, 29 first downs against Auburn a couple weeks ago, and a much better passing game down the field for Ole Miss. When you look at them dropping back, throwing the ball, this is one where you have to eliminate big plays. You got to.
I think zone here. Feels much better than trying to play man.
It does. You know, and you look at there's two things. You cannot let them run the ball for 250 yards. That's what they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
They run the ball for 250, then you have almost no chance to stop the passing game because they're going to play action, you double move, you do whatever, because then you're not able to send a bunch of guys at quarterback. So can you slow down this running game? They got a big injury on the offensive line. Ben Brown, they're – 40-game starter is out for the rest of the season. That's a big blow for them. You know, this should be a refreshed defense for Auburn. How do you attack them? Do you use that 2-4, 5, basically what they've been doing? I think a lot of different things. I think you got to throw a bunch of things at them.
And of course, a critical question is Owen Papo back?
Yeah, I mean –
if he is, that is a huge addition.
It is. It is when you start talking about, and Chandler Wooten's played well, but if you have Zacoby and Owen, two guys that can run Matt Corral down to the edge and run those running backs, Jaron Ealy and Connor, those guys, they get to the edge and it's a 15, 18-yard gain. If you limit those to 4 and 6 yard gains and eliminate those big chunk yardage plays, that'll go a long way.
Because Lane Kiffin has had such success in his career as a developer of quarterbacks and as a guy who has offenses with quarterbacks that are playing so well, I think people have this idea that, you know, he's looking to throw the ball 70-75% of the time, and that's not his game. He's coached multiple running backs to Heisman trophies in his offenses on top of what he's done throwing the football, what his offenses have done throwing the football. I mean, you have to be prepared for balance because, you know, he's an attack your weakness guy. I mean, that's what he's looking to do, and if he can make you overly concerned about one thing, he's going to use it to set up something else.
Absolutely, and you see that it's shot plays, but it's based on being able to run the football.
Yeah,
Lane
Kiffin is great at finding a weakness, and he'll pound you with it until you prove that. You've done something.
How many offensive coaches in college football right now can say I was the coordinator or an important figure on multiple teams that had running backs win the Heisman Trophy? Because Lane Kiffin had Reggie Bush and Derrick Henry as running backs.
How many have won it? Period.
That's right.
In the last
lightly.
15 years.
Yeah. So that's what you're talking about when you talk about the success Lane Kiffin teams have had. Maybe you don't associate him with hard nose between the tackles running the football. Maybe some of that's his personality or his attitude, and some of it assuredly is the fact that he's had quarterbacks with great seasons too. But if you can't stop the run against a Lane Kiffin team, I mean, he's gonna put you on the stove.
No.
Like, I mean, you're dinner.
You're gonna be gashed if you can't stop the run. And the other thing, I'm sure this has been a huge focal point for Auburn in these 2 weeks is don't get too excited when you make a third down stop.
Nope, you're going to have to defend four downs probably.
Man, I mean, last week, remember, he was going for it fourth and six from his own 35
and
on the first series of the game.
And they got a penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, I would say, five times at a minimum. And if you get ahead, it could be every possession. So, you're going to have a lot more of those plays to defend, which makes it tough.
Another reason why they run so many plays.
Yes, you give them.
And they convert a lot.
See, that's the thing. When you give them two chances on third and six,
right,
then, yeah, your chances are that one of those plays, you're going to make a play. And that's what they're betting on. That's part of the analytics that they do. Auburn's been really good on fourth down defense. you know, so far this year. That's a really interesting matchup. So I think it's a fun game. It should be a fun game. Should be exciting. I think the crowd's going to be great. This should be a great atmosphere.
Yeah, and today, all right, we had a chance to spend a little time with Bo and Roger McCreary, and I think the players are they're itching to get back out there and play a game. I think the open date's been good. They feel good. It's great to go into that open date off a win. They felt good going in, but seems like everybody and Coach Harsin yesterday. I mean, or Monday, excuse me. He seemed pretty excited about going ahead and getting back out there and feeling like they're in a pretty good place.
Yeah, I think they've, you know, they actually went out and, you know, a lot of open date is spent taking time off. They practiced a good bit. Now, they got some downtime too, but they got some work done, and I think that's who he is. You hear the players talking about it. It was fundamentals. You heard them, basics, all those things. I think this staff and his mentality, that 1-0 mentality, I think it'd be really important during a bye week, because they're not worried about anything else other than that day. And I think that's very beneficial when you start thinking about improving as a football team. Auburn has been, you know, under Gus Malzahn, they're pretty good after bye weeks. If they continue that and this team goes out and we see them take a step forward coming off Arkansas, then this will be a team that will be fun to watch in the second half of the season.
334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one of the drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from inside the Auburn Tigers, AUTigers.com. And we were talking during the break a little basketball. Got a scrimmage coming up Friday night, open to the public after Auburn volleyball.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun just to, you know, get people some eyes
everybody's
on this team.
Everybody's going to be healthy now. I understand there's been a stomach virus going around.
Yeah, hopefully they can get through there to get them to it to Friday night. But, yeah, just, you know, I think it'd be great for them to play in front of a crowd, to get used to having people in the build and those kind of things.
I think there will be, free attendance to watch this basketball team.
There'll be some folks there, you know, show up early, watch a little volleyball. And, hey, got to give them some credit. Unbelievable turnaround for them. New coaching staff that, you know, they basically had to, you know, end the season early last year.
Right.
I mean, they've gone out. They're winning and competing in the Southeastern Conference, which is incredible to watch. So definitely give them some props. They're playing at 6, and then the scrimmage will be after that at Auburn Arena.
I don't know too much about the success the volleyball team's having, but I believe it's a mixture. You got some veterans that have been there a couple of years, you know, taking their lumps, and some additions from the portal too. I think you got a couple of first years, you know, making an impact. So.
Yeah, and
a new coaching staff,
and a program
like
that has not had success at all for quite a while, so it's definitely definitely huge for them.
So it's Friday night at the arena. You got the volleyball game and then the scrimmage afterward.
Right.
Yeah. Hopefully,
right.
People check that out.
Yeah, we were just talking. I mean, the excitement is so high, and you know, I'm on with Wimp Sanderson and his show on Wednesdays, and he was giving me information about the Auburn UAB scrimmage from the other day. Apparently, he had somebody that was there that told Wimp, Auburn, you know, sort of to the Alabama perspective, Auburn looks really, really good. But he was impressed. He said his guy was impressed by the point guard, Zepp Jasper, and by the bigs, Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the group that I would lean toward. I didn't see it, but those are the guys that I think are going to be really key for this team. You know, we start talking about newcomers. Zepp has been really good. KD Johnson's been good, the transfer from Georgia.
KD Johnson's a guy that, I mean, you know, you forget he didn't play. He just sort of comes in midseason and still averaged, 13, 14 points a game.
Absolutely. I think he's a guy that can fill it up. Yeah, like I said, I've been calling him the microwave since I saw him in a couple of preseason practices, because he's built like a running back.
He is.
He's not real tall, but he's thick and can go. So, yeah, this is an exciting team. And the exciting thing is to watch and see Alan Flanagan walking around and obviously doing some stuff. You know, he puts video up of him in the pool and
great
doing
for him
things.
To be a coach's first team preseason all conference.
Yeah, it shows you the coaches realize the value mm-hmm. that he brings. I mean, obviously, leading returning scorer in this league, and you know the media didn't vote him first team all SEC, and he's also a really good defensive player. Yeah, he's a valuable guy, and you know if he continues to come on, and you could get him back. You know, sometime in December to kind of ease back into things before mm-hmm. SEC play would be huge for this team.
Jason, we've just got a couple of minutes. As we said, there's so much going on. Didn't even get to baseball. But I mean, it's a great time of year, and there's so much info that you guys have there at AUTigers.com.
Yeah, you mentioned baseball. I went out last Saturday and watched them play Clemson mm-hmm. For a while. Long 12 innings. I didn't make it all 12, but I stayed up for most of it. And, you know, really really good for them to against other competition.
Yeah, I was really hoping to get out there, but I was dealing with thermostat problems.
Yes, the Orange-Blue World Series begins today. Mm-hmm. First game, you know, going on here. It's actually going on right now, I believe. But Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for them. Orange Blue World Series, be at Auburn IMG Academy Friday night for me, which would, you know, folks want to see 50 or so Division One, you know, players on I won't say quote unquote high school football team, then that'll be your opportunity there. But really good test for Auburn to see, you know, where those guys stack up in terms of playing against that top flight competition. A few Auburn targets and, you know, on that roster as well. So have that obviously coverage Saturday. Wall to wall, beginning to end, AUTigers.com, 247, and check me out on Twitter at ITATJason.
Yep. Jason will be busy, but some great information that everybody can check out there. Jason, thanks a lot, man. It's always great having you in.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
It's going to do it for hour number one of The Drive. We're wide open in hour number two. Come on in here on the Wednesday edition.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Drew, the regular crew here in the Wow Business Studio.
That's right. You can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to Wow. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com.
Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And our thanks to Jason Caldwell, from inside the Auburn Tigers, AUTigers.com, for spending hour number one of The Drive here on this Wednesday with us. Hope you had a chance, but I know there's some folks getting off work that did not. But never fear. Don't be concerned. There is a way you can catch up on everything.
That's right. The podcast machine is recording today's show, and we are going to upload it as soon as we're...
Is that what we call Drew?
That's
the
right.
Podcast machine?
Drew Forehand, the podcast machine, is pushes some buttons over there, and a podcast you know, it cranks out about an hour later. So we're going to upload our podcast. Daily podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. You can go wherever you find your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, and you'll find it. You can also go to the ESPNAU.com podcast center, or you can use the ESPN 106.7 Alexa skill or the app, the award-winning ESPN 106.7 app, to find our podcast.
That's right. So, make sure, in case you miss anything, you know, you can catch back up.
How are you feeling? I think we opened the show maybe Monday talking about this. In the last 48 hours, we've talked a lot about the Auburn-Ole Miss game.
I feel about the same as I have all the way. I mean, it's a scary game, which is appropriate for Halloween weekend. I mean, it's one where this could be a wild one. I mean, there have been some shootouts in this series.
This could be
another one.
You think this could be a shootout at the OK Corral, maybe?
Nah.
Is
he OK? He may not be.
If it's a shootout, Ole Miss hopes that Corral is OK.
Right.
But you're right. This is one where, I mean, you would love – if you're Auburn, you'd love to replicate. I mean, you had a dream start against Arkansas, right? I mean, the way.
Oh, absolutely.
And something I noticed, and I'd be interested in. I don't know how just because I don't know if Auburn's had a coach in recent memory. Seems like Brian Harsin's MO is to get the ball when he wins the toss. That's happened.
I think he does like offense.
I think a couple
and
of
you know
times
what? Against Ole Miss, I think both teams want the ball.
That's right. I mean, so no, and it's just it seems like the more commonly held belief now in football is that you want the ball to start the second half. But mm-hmm. Brian Harsin, I think against
he wants to set the tone for the game.
I believe against both Georgia and Arkansas, Auburn won the toss and took the ball to start the game because he wanted to get his offense out there to start. And you know that's.
And that's something that I think preseason a lot of fans would have thought there's no way.
Right.
There's no way. The defense has got to carry this team.
I wonder how much of that is confidence in that side of the ball and how much of that is just Brian Harsin's attitude as a coach and
I think a lot of it is Brian Harsin.
Yeah.
That's his attitude is let's get the ball, let's set the tempo for this game.
Well, he'll find a willing dance partner in Lane Kiffin, right? Because that's somebody else that's very happy to trade offensive possessions and see who's got the better side of the ball on that side. I mean, is there a particular aspect of Auburn's defense that you think has to come through or win its fair share? Or because
I think linebackers got to play very well. Yeah. I really do. I mean, you know, Jason was talking about. I mean, is Auburn going to do something going with fewer guys up front, having more sort of linebacker / safeties to be able to cover and come up, show different looks? And try to stop the run, but if you miss your gap, if you take a step the wrong way, Ole Miss is going to gash you with the run, and that sets you up where you're playing on your heels. I mean, you have got to keep them from being in second and short because, as we've said, they're most likely going to go for it on fourth down. So you better not let them have. Decent yardage on first down.
Their ability to spread you out and hand the ball to a home run hitter is reminiscent of the 06 Arkansas team that mm-hmm. Gus had. And maybe they don't have McFadden and Jones and Peyton Hillis in the backfield.
No, there's nothing wrong with Snoop Connor and Jerry on Ely. But, I mean, Ely looked really good last week against LSU, didn't he?
Yes.
He'd missed a couple of games with a concussion, man. He looked good
last week. And in his absence, Snoop Connor has excelled.
Oh, he's the big every down back kind of guy. It's not like Ely's a little guy, but he's the home run hitter.
But do you see some parallels to Darren McFadden and Felix Jones and the way you had to defend them? I mean, defending that team was like mixing hazardous chemicals where if you made one mistake, right? I mean the whole thing's burning down. So that's sort of how you have to proceed. And by the way, Matt Corral's got 15 touchdowns and an interception.
Don't forget that their leading rusher is Matt Corral.
Right. And when they throw the ball, they've been very good at that too. So it's a challenge. It's not insurmountable, but I mean at the same time, Auburn's defense.
And then there's Henry Parrish Jr. who is the they have five players over 300 yards rushing. Five players. And Jerrion Ely is the fifth of those five. Corral has 500. Corral has 474. Parrish has 407. Snoop Connor 388. They've got Parrish in here twice. Okay, so they all have four. They've got Corral, Parrish, Connor, Parrish.
He's that good.
Ely. He's so good that they list him twice. So they have four backs. With over 300 yards rushing, Jerrion Ely with 320.
But something else that's a testament to how good this Ole Miss team is with a player like John Rhys Plumlee, like a different team would be featuring that guy, right?
You're not kidding. I mean, he was so electric as the running quarterback 2 years ago.
Right, and they've played him all over the field. They've thrown the ball.
Yeah, he's mostly a slot guy.
I think he's one of the kick returners as well. I mean, just but a guy like that
does have seven carries for 80 yards this year. Plumlee does.
On a team with less talent at the skill positions, that guy would be on the field constantly. But Ole Miss has the luxury of being able to use him as sparingly as they do mm-hmm. because they've got players that they trust and they can. I mean, not just in the run game, but also when Matt Corral throws the football.
Yeah, I mean, again, they average 5.5 yards a rush, and they have multiple guys that can can hurt you there. So, I mean, very impressive, very scary offense. That's why. Yeah, I think Auburn's got a great shot if they don't beat themselves, don't make just some glaring mistakes.
Drummond was a guy I think there was a lot of interest in because Ole Miss, every year it seems like they reload at receiver, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. who's up now? And with Dontario Drummond, I mean, he came into the year as the focus, had the huge game against Louisville, hasn't had the same kind of production, but they're clearly still going to him. And he's had some big games in conference play. Maybe not.
I mean, he's by far their leading receiver.
Right. He didn't. I mean, he had the 200 yards against Louisville, and you thought maybe this guy was going to be able. I mean, he's still a great receiver.
He's averaging almost 90 yards a game receiving.
That's what I mean. I mean,
averaging.
He's still and in conference, and it's not like there's one game that really skews that in of late. I mean, he's been a consistent threat, and you know, not just in short yardage, but he's made some big plays too. He's not the only guy you have to shut down, but he's really taken a step forward among the pass catchers.
Well, I mean, they've been without some of their top guys. You know, Mingo's been out for a while. I was asking Jason about that, and he said that, and I didn't get a chance to hear the SEC teleconference today, but Lane Kiffin apparently said on the teleconference that most of their receivers could be back this week. And that's not great news.
Speaking of the teleconference, so what did Ed Orgeron say?
I have no idea what was said on the teleconference.
He said something
today
about like they barely have enough players
now. He said that yesterday.
Okay, that was yesterday.
Yeah, he said that at his weekly press conference.
He said
they didn't have enough players to scrimmage.
Yeah, they didn't have enough players to scrimmage, and they don't have enough players to have a full practice. They don't have enough healthy players to have a full practice, and it's the bye week, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a lot of work you got to do before you go to Alabama.
That is right, and you just wonder how much motivation is there for LSU.
What, are they having tryouts later this week to get the team ready for Alabama?
They just haven't tried. They just like to make sure that they're all trying. That's right.
I mean, maybe it's because we heard that so much more last year, right? When you had a team saying, well, we don't know.
It was because of guys testing positive.
We don't know how we're,
quarantine. And
yeah, we don't know if we'll be able to practice. We don't know if we'll be able to play. But that's something you haven't really heard much of this year. But LSU, very banged up going into their bye week and Alabama next week.
And you would think, like Jason mentioned this a little earlier, back to Ole Miss. Look at their schedule. If they're getting some guys back, they still have to be pretty beat up. This is a brutal stretch for Ole Miss.
Yeah, it's the downside of having. I mean, yes, it sounded great to play three games and then have an extra week of preparation before you play Alabama. But
yeah, let's go out and start playing nothing but ranked teams for the next month.
Well, not just playing ranked teams, but playing, yeah, you're right, just every single week.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a bye week on September 25th, Saturday, September 25th. Mm-hmm. What did Auburn, that was Georgia State. So if you think back to that was when Auburn played Georgia State. Ole Miss took a bye week that Saturday.
That seems like forever ago.
They've played every week since.
Yeah, and list who they played.
And they've played, Alabama.
At Alabama.
Then they hosted Arkansas.
Yeah.
Then they went to Tennessee, played that wild game.
Uh-huh.
And then they hosted LSU.
Okay, and now they go to Auburn. So LSU is the breather in there, and they did. They won that one pretty comfortably.
Yes, and I would think back to Auburn caught Arkansas at the tail end of a brutal stretch.
Yes,
and it played to Auburn's advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the same thing happens this Saturday.
You would think that physically Auburn should have the advantage going in this weekend. We'd love your thoughts on the ball game. Hour number one, we opened up talking about game one of the World Series where the Braves win last night. 6-1 was the final score as the Braves led throughout. Five runs, well, two in the first, some history. Hard to believe. It's hard to believe, Dan, that there had never been a leadoff homer to open a World Series.
Yeah, never had a top of the first home run.
First batter of the World Series hitting a homer.
That's right, but you had it last night with Soler. We were discussing the move to put Soler back in the leadoff spot, and he pays off with a big swing to open the game.
That was a bomb.
Yeah, it was.
Bomb.
Both of the Braves. Duvall's
was a laser,
yeah,
man. Duvall, that was a, it got to the outfield in like 2 seconds.
And then Duvall,
into the seats,
I think Duvall hit one later that was like
just as hard.
No, the upper deck foul ball. I mean, he hit one, you know, to the left of the foul pole there and left, and it was
he has prodigious power.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, when some of those Braves and I mean, they're guys who outside of the top four or five hitters in the lineup, there are a couple of players in the Braves. Darnot qualifies.
We talked about it last night. I mean, top to bottom, those are two scary lineups.
That's right. But I mean, and the way
that is, I think that is the most dangerous Braves lineup. And it's crazy they don't have Acuña. But I mean, is from 1 through 9, I've never seen a Braves lineup as dangerous as this.
Well, and part of it's because the way some of these guys have heated up, right? Because maybe in August,
ooh, yeah.
In August, you wouldn't have said
Rosario wouldn't have been a guy that you're thinking he's going to be in the middle of the lineup.
You wouldn't have thought Jock Peterson makes a difference, you know. In August, you may have been suspicious of Soler at that point. But the addition they've made on top of these guys that the Braves have been building around for a while, you're right. It makes this lineup really, really dangerous.
And I mean, you've got now
getting Darnot back helped too, because they didn't have Darnot for the first couple.
And
months.
Then on the flip side, you've got a 27 home run hitting guy hitting number 9 because he's cooled off a little, but it's still a guy with the threat of doing what Dansby Swanson can, hitting number 9.
Right, and making the big play on the base paths. Right, getting past that tackle on the or getting past the tag on the had a, that's actually one where
back in the day
you get a collision right on that play where Swanson goes around Maldonado there at the plate on the short sack fly, but you're right. I mean, there were short sack fly
the play after, who was the pitcher, Stanek?
Yes.
Static trying to go. First of all, first baseman needs to go over and make that play.
Yeah.
First baseman doesn't need to go, oh, yeah, I'll let my pitcher sprawl out.
Is that a shift casualty, you think? I mean, there's too far away.
I don't
away
know what it is, but the first baseman's got to go over. And if he just goes over and feels it, it's first and second. All right? That's all it's going to be, is first and second. But by going back to the bag and let Static try to chase the ball, man, I felt it was awful. It felt like T-ball. I felt like I was watching T-ball.
Yeah, that's
he's going, the ball is rolling away from you while you're trying to reach out and get it.
Yeah, that's that Soler who nearly bunted a double, right? Yeah. I mean, just barely contacts
check
that thing.
Check swing the ball into a perfect spot.
Yeah, and he got the first and third, and then, yeah, Freeman had the short sack fly, and Swanson – I mean, he looked dead to rights when that ball gets there.
You're
and,
not kidding.
And finds a way around the tag, 6-1, and from that point on, the Braves handed to the bullpen, and it was you get a big
Braves bullpen has been phenomenal.
You get a big start from Fried tonight, and you're I mean, yes,
even without Charlie Morton, that's what I said. If they get the win tonight, then I don't see how the series gets back to Houston.
Did you see, by the way, that Kyle Wright was on the roster
they added Kyle Wright
for Camargo, I think.
For Camargo, and did you see the move they made today for Charlie Morton? They had Tucker Davidson.
Tucker Davidson. I was going to say there was probably, you know, it probably would have been Bryce Wilson had they not traded him for the Pirates closer who has
disappeared.
Who's in the witness protection program.
I mean, he has absolutely disappeared. Now, you see that sometimes. Guys just don't function well once they've been closers. Richard Rodriguez, I don't know what happened, because he was so good.
Yeah, he was one of the best
relief Pirates closer, and I thanked him very much for that. But, I mean, absolutely useless since he's been
And brave. That's for all the praise of the deadline deals the Braves made.
That was the biggest – that people thought that was as big a deal because they got that guy who might step in case Will Smith falters.
When they made the deal, it seemed like Rodriguez was the most impactful player they added of all of them.
Right.
And he's not on the roster
no.
because of performance. It's not an injury.
And they keep needing to add pitchers, and it's like, no, not him.
Yeah, they can't trust him. It's remarkable to see what's happened in just a couple of months. And despite that, we were saying with Barrett yesterday, I think this might still be the best trade deadline anybody's ever had. Even if the Braves don't win the series, I mean, it's tough to look
ever,
at.
Ever is a long time.
Ever is a long time. You say ever, but I would think maybe right now the answer is Verlander, because Verlander came to the Astros in 17, and from that point on, I mean, he was as good as I mean, he was the best pitcher in baseball from the deadline through the World Series. So, I mean, there have been some huge additions at the trade deadline before. We've talked about the postseason Carlos Beltran had, you know, when he went into. I mean, that was a huge addition for his team. I don't know if they had, I don't think they ended up winning the World Series that year though, because it was the Mets. So they couldn't have. The Mets don't win the World Series. The Braves had a when you think about who's contributing and you know when the Braves got him.
What'll be interesting is and sure it doesn't matter right now. If the Braves win the series, sure. It'll also be interesting to see who of these guys are Braves next year.
Yeah, I'm nervous about talking about the future with Major League Baseball because there does seem to be some labor disharmony at
the
moment.
Gee, what breaking news that is. Could ever be labor problems in Major League Baseball.
And at a terrible time, too. I mean, this could be an awesome offseason. I mean, we're getting a great postseason, and I think folks are excited to go to Major League Baseball games right now, especially if they root for good teams. And there's a lot of exciting free agents going into the pool this offseason, and it seems like they sound far apart on important issues when Manfred was talking about the CBA and stuff. And it just I hope next season starts on time. I would not offer a guarantee that next year's Major League Baseball season starts on time because I know how these things can play out. And that's
I agree. It's a shame.
It's a shame because it's not casting a pall over this World Series, thankfully, but it's something that would be a more compelling storyline if we didn't have this sort of the labor discord we might have in baseball right now.
The Braves would have a few guys in there when they talk about deadline deals, Fred McGriff. But the Braves would also give you one where it looked so lopsided the other way when they traded Alabama native Doyle Alexander to the Tigers. He went 9-0 down the stretch for the Tigers, but then was bombed in the championship series.
John Smoltz?
And the minor leaguer they got, the little-known minor leaguer they got in that deal was John Smoltz. So that was a pretty good deadline.
I think
deal.
Speaking of trades, the Max Fried trade worked out for the Braves, right?
Yes,
Upton? Was that Justin Upton?
Yes,
I think
it
to the
was.
Upton to the Padres right. for a package that included recent first-round pick, Max Fried.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's starting in the biggest game of his career and could put you up 2-0 in the World Series.
That's right. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Thought we had a call coming in. Give us a call on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. We're right back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Noble here with Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air. We need
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio, and we mentioned the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number 334-321-1390. Again, don't forget, you can text us as well on the Drive text box.
That's right. You can send us a text, 334-564-1840, the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more about Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I was, what y'all said in the last break, that was exactly what I was thinking about a week ago, because I was thinking, Lane Kiffin got really, they got hosed on their schedule, because to play three chump games and then have a bye, and then you got to play nine straight games after that. That's
terrible.
Insanely ridiculous.
That is
terrible. And we're sitting all over them because we got the bye before them, and then they have, we're the fifth game in a row after that schedule. And like you said, it's not just the teams, but it's just, you get beat down after playing certain teams, Alabama, Georgia. After those games, LSU is just a team, even though, that they may not be doing great. They're still, they got a couple people hurt from that LSU game. But I agree with Jason when he said that, they're, and he, even J-Boy said it, it's like they're missing a lot of people. And it's hard to get up every single week. But the fact that it's a night game even is even better for us, because, we hate those early games, but it should be loud out there. It should be crazy. Just hope that we don't have any bad news on, if anybody's suspended. But I think the same problem we're going to have next week, though, is that Texas A&M has a bye, and they're sitting on us,
yep.
after So it works its way through the system. But
at least Auburn won't be coming off three or four straight physical games. They'll be coming off just the one game back for Ole Miss. What'll be another thing that's interesting, though, I'm still wondering, who Kobe Wooden was talking about yesterday. He was talking about the defense getting some important players, he said. Now, we've been talking about Owen Papo, but what other players?
Well, we had somebody ask about T.D. Moultrie and whether or not the T.D. Moultrie situation could be resolved if you're talking about potential players.
Yeah.
Because there aren't, I mean.
Who else has not been out there?
Who's the D-lineman who got hurt in the Arkansas game? Was that Marquise Burks or Robinson? I can't believe I'm blanking on
Burks.
It was Marquise Burks, right? Maybe there's a banged up defensive lineman that he's talking about. But you're going to need all hands on deck against the Ole Miss offense. So it's if you can get Owen Papo back, that'd be huge.
Yeah, well, I think the key to this game is, and it's very similar to Arkansas. I think in that game we took the ball first. I really think you do not let Lane Kiffin get out. You want to do what Alabama did, get out to a lead. Then he's down 21-0. I'm not saying we can do that, but then Lane started making stupid decisions. You know, I mean, he went for one time when it was 21-0. He went for the 4th-and-1 on their own side, and that gave Alabama an easy touchdown that was made at 28. And that point, it was over. So I think we need to get the ball. I think they're going to have trouble stopping our offense because I think it's clicking. It's clicking right now, and I do agree with Landon King. He's starting to become one of my favorite players. It seems like for whatever reason they don't seem to cover him when he was running downfield. I mean, even on the game we lost before he was open on the last drive, you know, running down the field, and you know, we just overthrew him in the game before the Georgia game on the last drive of the game. He was open. So for whatever reason, he seems to be getting open. So there's only so many guys.
I mean, you see a guy like that, and you're generally going to cover him with a linebacker. I would imagine that Ole Miss has maybe seen a little bit, and they might have an extra defensive back on the field. But that's where you hope you're getting mismatches when you've got somebody who can run better than a linebacker can cover.
Yeah, well, and it's the same on defense, though. They've been having a tackle all those tough teams. I mean, they're.
That's a good point. They have to be beat up. And I would imagine take it a little easy during the week in practice.
And I think we were saying this about the Arkansas game, but it's true this week too. I mean, I think that it would be discouraging for Auburn. Now, if you get a superhuman performance from Bo Nix and the passing game is great and you win anyway, that's wonderful. But it'd be disappointing if the running game doesn't show some improvement, because Ole Miss has not been stopping people a lot.
Statistically, they're probably the easiest. Well, they will be the easiest team you have left on your schedule to run the ball against.
Right. So you'd hope that whatever's gotten off track with the running game can get fixed when Auburn plays Saturday.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think Big Buck Hunter is resting. He's ready to bust and tank as well. So I think this could be the game where they don't want to tackle. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, Hunter, and appreciate the phone call, Pat. Yeah, Bigsby and Shivers, and yes, even young Big Buck Hunter could be a huge part of Auburn attacking on the ground.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Final half hour coming up. Love for you to join in on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390, or the Drive text box, 334-564-1840.
Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 25 minutes here on the Wednesday edition. You know, I mean, usually, let's say, well, I don't know. I guess maybe it's because we haven't had that many matched, ranked matchups coming into Halloween. Seems like usually coming up on Halloween week, we're doing some silly stuff. But, I mean, there is real sports stuff going on. I know a lot of times we've scariest this or that and things like that. And it's like, this is such a big ball game coming up this weekend. And there's so much that is going on. Want to remind everybody, Game 2 of the World Series tonight on ESPN 106.7. Tomorrow. That would be Friday. Tomorrow. I'm wanting the week to hurry up and get over. Friday night, over on Sister Station Wings 94.3. Jason mentioned he will be at the Auburn IMG. Yes, that IMG matchup on Friday night.
That's not the only thing going on Friday night.
No. I'm just saying, but what a way to sort of get you prepped for the postseason, playing a team that is as loaded as an IMG.
Oh, sure. You've got Auburn High and IMG, which you can catch. We're going to talk with Scott Bagwell tomorrow. And of course, you can catch that on Wings 94.3 Friday night from the Duck. You've also on campus got the volleyball game and the
volleyball
scrimmage.
/ basketball scrimmage. And as Jason was saying, I mean, the only thing we've heard recently that has been a bump in the road for Auburn basketball has been a pretty bad stomach virus that apparently, and thank goodness I can't give you firsthand information on this, but apparently it has affected most of the team and a lot of the staff and has prevented them from getting a lot of practice work done. But they expect everybody back and ready to go because they're going to do the slam dunk contest and have the scrimmage on Friday. I mentioned that, Wednesday.
This is the rare Auburn basketball story where I don't want more details.
No, you're right. I don't, and I didn't want to be, I didn't want to be anywhere near firsthand knowledge.
You get to see him scrimmage against UAB. I want to hear as much as possible.
You hear that
they're battling a stomach virus.
That's okay.
Yeah, I can.
Good luck, guys. Get over it.
I'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah, that's right. But to the scrimmage, though, again, like I said, have an opportunity. For some reason, Wimp and his son, Barry Sanderson, want me on to talk a little Auburn every Wednesday. Now, granted, the first half of the time was all Brian Harsin / COVID. And it's like, I don't know. I can't really tell you any more than what we know.
It's an ongoing investigation.
Right. But the second half, Wimp offered up that he had a source that was there at the scrimmage who was very, and he emphasized, very impressed with Auburn basketball.
You think it was Andy Kennedy? You think you talked to Andy Kennedy?
I doubt that Andy Kennedy's given Wimp the inside scoop.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Andy Kennedy.
I think Andy Kennedy is.
Wimp probably knows somebody at UAB basketball.
I'm sure.
Although I wouldn't rule it out that Wimp talks to Andy Kennedy.
I doubt that it's Andy Kennedy.
Okay. Well, maybe.
I doubt that it's Andy Kennedy.
You know, I don't want to try to sniff out his source.
What did he hear?
That's what's important.
Yes, he was told that Auburn was very impressive. This was the most athletic Auburn team this observer had ever seen. And the first thing he said was, oh, my goodness, at the big men. Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler, he thought both of those guys were better than any big man they had ever seen at Auburn.
And that's, I mean, the idea that you have two of them at the same time,
right,
you know, who could individually be that good.
He said that Jabari youngin was a better version of Stromile Swift.
Which is a name that maybe for some younger fans,
right,
they don't realize what a great college basketball player Stromile Swift. Stromile Swift was a super athletic 6'10 forward, right?
Yes.
I mean, the offensive game was sort of rounding into form, but the things he could do you weren't used to seeing 6'10" players do. Maybe really tall, athletic bigs. Maybe a little bit lanky. Maybe that's wiry.
He was 6'10", 220.
Right, and I was talking with Jason about a guy that Stromile Smith compared. You know, I remember Tyrus Thomas from LSU about 15 years ago. He was a forward on the Final Four team with Big Baby Davis, and he was a 6'10", 220-pound forward who ended up being a top 5 pick in the NBA as a freshman. Took his team to the stop me if any of this sounds attractive.
Right.
6'10", 220-pound freshman who takes his team to the Final Four and leaves, and he's a top 5 pick in the NBA draft after his one season in college basketball. If those are the kind of players Jabari Smith is being compared to, it's a good start. I mean, it's a good start to your career. I mean, you got to realize that potential on the court, but I mean he seems to be. The reviews are glowing thus far of the folks who have gotten to see Jabari Smith, and not just Jabari Smith. The backcourt has impressed folks.
Right. Zepp Jasper apparently has really, really come on here. You know, we started hearing folks observers saying, man, it looks like Jeff Jasper is taking that starting point guard spot. And I think a lot of people were a little surprised, thinking maybe it was going to be Wendell Green Jr. and that Zepp would be the defensive stopper and the guy who got a lot of minutes but wasn't necessarily the man. Zepp Jasper has really, you know, he shot it very well at the tip-off at Toomer's. I think he won the three-point competition, didn't he, at the tip-off at Toomer's? I believe he did. And he shot it really well. Anytime observers have been able to watch practice, as well as continuing to be a defensive stopper and a guy who has a tremendous assist-to-turnover ratio.
For some reason, I thought Jabari won it at the end with the money
maybe,
ball.
Maybe he did, but Zepp really impressed.
That's right.
I guess that's what it was, is nobody expected Zepp to be as proficient shooting as he was. But, I mean, that was the other name that got mentioned today, was the big guys and Zepp. And as Jason said, you know, Katie Johnson's the name. Don't sleep on Katie Johnson, the Georgia transfer.
Well, without Alan Flanagan, at least to start the year, and it remains to be seen when they can start to work Alan Flanagan, you know, into the fold. Without Alan Flanagan, I mean, yes, one of the three players nominally won't be a starter between Zepp Jasper, Wendell Green, and Katie Johnson. You would expect all three of them to play a lot.
I agree.
Without Alan Flanagan.
Well, I mean, if you're only playing them at those two spots, you've got 80 minutes, and that's still 25 plus minutes each if you tried to split them up evenly.
And are you sure the three of them can't be on the court together?
No, that's what I said. If you were only using those two spots,
that's what I mean. So you could also Alan Flanagan,
you can steal a few minutes from the three.
You could see if one of them can play the three. You know, with along with Cambridge and
well, it's Jalen Williams too. I mean, because you were asking Jason during a break, who's the three?
Well, between Jalen Williams and Chris Moore and
Devin Cambridge
and possibly the potential going with your top three guard at the same time. I mean, it's a good situation to be in. Not that you don't miss Alan Flanagan, because adding Alan Flanagan just makes you all that much better. But it does seem like, at least at the moment, with everyone healthy, they can absorb it and even have some unique lineup combinations as they figure out which five need to be on the court and when.
Text listening online texts in that, Stromile Swift played point forward, where Tyrus Thomas was more a true four.
Right. I don't know. I don't know what the Stros, like, I don't know if the comparison was his playmaking. I don't know what they were comparing.
No, he said that's what he reminded him of, his abilities handling the ball, moving, he said, but a better shooter.
See, I thought they were talking more physically.
No, he was saying that type of player, but a better shooter, which is pretty scary.
You know, a guy that would make a comparison, Lamar Odom had some of that too. If you think about, you know, 6'10", a skilled 6'10", super athletic, and it was, I mean, Lamar Odom transitioned into a different role and wasn't really much of a college basketball player. I mean, he had the 1 year at URI, but most of his success came as a pro. But he's also someone who would fit that sort of 6'10", but able to play all five positions at 6'10", and provide a lot of things to a basketball team on both ends of the floor. It's a great player to have on a talent with talent around him.
Yes, I mean, this is I agree with Jason. I think there will be a few folks wanting to watch the scrimmage on Friday night to see these guys. I mean, this team is so deep in talent. So deep.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, what they've got is and especially when you think about the first team all SEC player recovering from a torn Achilles,
right?
Because a scooter hit him in the foot. Like
and I mean, I've heard, you know, heard over and over how much improvement there is in Dylan Cardwell, who is a little leaner than he was a year ago and feeling even more athletic than we saw from him. You know, that just.
Oh, it's, I mean, so much of the excitement is based around players who weren't on last year's team. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Look, if you went with all three guards, you could have a starting five that was five players who weren't on last year's team.
But then you've got guys who were youngsters a year ago. Remember the improvement from Alan Flanagan from his freshman to his sophomore year, and think about some of the young guys who have an opportunity to make that kind of step that you see between freshman and sophomore.
Yeah, it's really exciting to think, what if a player or two from last year's team, or guys who have been in the system, have made a big step forward, you know, whether it's Jalen or one of the guards or one of the players who played.
Yeah, Chris Moore and Dylan and Devin and yeah.
Absolutely. I mean there's yes. I mean the possibility of some improvement from somebody you're maybe not thinking about very much is also there on top of the excitement over, well, let's take a look at these the shiny new toys that mm-hmm. Bruce Pearl and his staff have to play with.
334-321-1390, that's the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Jeff is up next. Hey Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing fine.
Great to hear from you, Jeff.
Good. Man, you're getting me excited about this Auburn hoops. I think it's going to be an exciting year.
It's hard to imagine that it's not going to be. I mean, I'm just, when I have somebody like a Wimp Sanderson tell me that he's here and it's the most talented Auburn team they've ever seen, then yeah, I think that's pretty exciting.
Wow. So, yeah, it should be an exciting winter on the plains with Pearl's boys. Anyway, I'm calling about this game this weekend.
Sure.
I really believe this game, our success is not in the air, it's on the ground. I think this is perfect time to reestablish our physical dominance of all Ole Miss greatness. Physicality is not one of their strengths. And this week, I would challenge the big uglies up front, just saying, boys, we're going to run this ball, and we're going to run it, and we're going to run it some more. And challenge Ole Miss to stop us. I think that provides those opportunities when they crowd the box,
mm-hmm.
throw the ball deep. No more chunks and dunks. You know, I found out you see how defensive backs, a lot of pressure put on them around the country when that ball is thrown. Pass interferences, there's mix-ups. So we have to establish that ground game and then take chunk passes when they're available.
You know, that's exactly what Ole Miss does offensively.
Yeah.
I mean, they pressure you with that run, and if you start worrying about the run, then yes, they're gonna take every opportunity to beat you deep.
And something Auburn did against Arkansas, which they had not really done to this point in the year, was connect on those passes downfield in a way that they. I mean,
yes.
you were hoping that whether it was new additions to the team like Demetrius Robertson or guys Bo's been working with for a little while, you know that they were gonna start to see some of that chemistry. And you finally saw, you know, deep passes to Javarius Johnson and Demetrius Robertson that were huge plays against Arkansas. You're going to need a little bit of that against Ole Miss, too. You better hit some homers.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the way the game is played now. We just can't chunk and dunk that ball. When you spread out these defenses, that put a lot of pressure on them. And as I said, the physical ground game, with Ole Miss being beat up as they are, I don't think they have the quality depth as we do to withstand that for four quarters. I would give a heavy dose early to Tank. It's about time for him to have a breakout game, and I believe this would be it. I, if I was the coaching staff, I would challenge him and the big uglies up front to have a mindset that we're going to blow these guys off the ball.
That would be great. And would also, I mean, it's going to be lit Saturday night. That would incite things even more.
Yeah, I mean,
if Auburn can really get it going.
I mean, they were Ole Miss was able to hold LSU's rushing attack, especially after that historic game LSU had the week before. But the three games before the LSU game,
they were torched.
I mean, 200 plus yards rushing in three straight games, 350 yards rushing allowed to Arkansas. SEC teams have had success running the football this season against Ole Miss. You would hope that Auburn can find a way, whether it's Bigsby or Hunter or Shivers. You would hope Auburn can get some yards on the ground this Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see. I really hope that be our game plan come Saturday night. Thanks, guys.
Great hearing from you, Jeff. Thank you.
Good stuff, Jeff.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in. The Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390, or text us on the Drive text box, 334-564-1840, as we wind it down on the Wednesday Drive.
Some gifts.
Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio with Drew at the controls. And, Yeah, it's been another fun show as we get ready for game two of the World Series tonight and get closer to a big weekend. I mean, we were talking basketball there, but I mean, yeah, this is a big, big weekend coming up.
And something with Max Fried, not that I hate when players develop the, oh, he's not as good in the postseason as he is in the regular season reputation, you know, because the sample sizes are different.
It's very small right
now.
Yeah,
it can, too. Exactly. But if you think about those Braves teams, right, like the stretch of division champions, I think all three of those pitchers maybe are remembered as guys who were better regular season than postseason performers. All three of the Braves aces of the 90s and early 2000s. I think they're all remembered as guys.
Smoltz probably doesn't get as much of that. I mean, he lost that 1-0 game to.
Yeah, and not to say they weren't.
Morris. Yeah. I could see him with a mustache. Couldn't
sure.
His name.
But again, not trying to defame any of the great Braves Hall of Fame pitchers, but I think all three of them are yeah. I mean they were the standard they set in the regular season would have been tough to
sure.
Now I believe
you do have to remember you're going against the other best team in baseball. There in the World Series,
I heard when Kershaw was dealing with not having a championship to his name,
he's got a little larger sample.
But the PTI guys would compare him to Greg Maddux as a great, brilliant regular season player who wouldn't reach that standard in the postseason. I think a great start tonight for Max Fried. He'll have more opportunities going forward. This is a big moment in Max Fried's career, not just because he could put the Braves up 2-0, but also because I don't know if he's had that dominant postseason start yet in his career.
Well, he's only had 7 postseason starts, and this year in the postseason, he's 1-1 with a 3.78.
I'm going to check. Has he had like a really good start in his? I mean, not that he's been terrible or anything in the postseason. I'm not suggesting that about Max Fried, but he's so good in the regular season. I mean, he's one of the. I mean, he's on the short list of the young pitchers in baseball you would want going forward for the rest of their careers.
This year in the postseason, his first start was a 6 shutout, three hits, no walks, 9 Ks against the Brewers.
He did. He had the great pitching, great game against the Brewers.
Then against the Dodgers, he went 6 innings, 2 runs. 8 base runners, so that was good. And then his roughest start was his last time out against the Dodgers.
And that was a lot of that damage was after he left the game. He left guys on the on the base
sure
path.
Did.
It hasn't
been that bad.
Right. And tonight
he's got a .94 WHIP.
And that's even with
this year in the postseason.
Even with the bad and that's even with the yeah, with the subpar start bad. At the end. No, so I think Fried, you're not nervous about what Fried gives you in the postseason. You'd love to see him have a dominant Max Fried type start in this moment because it's such a big spot, and if they can do it here, it shifts the series back to Atlanta potentially
with the party on, man. Seriously,
yeah, this weekend will be a big one in that case.
I suspect
a lot of tailgates Friday night could have the Braves game on here locally, and maybe even some folks. Saturday could be
checking the score. There, no question.
Do you think they could put it on the little corner of the big screen?
I don't know that would be a wise idea to distract.
During commercial breaks, maybe they
maybe
could.
During a commercial. All right. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell for joining us here on the Wednesday Drive. A fun Thursday on tap again tomorrow.
Loaded Thursday show. Scott Bagwell, the voice of the Auburn High School Tigers. Justin Ferguson going to be with us the whole show. From the Auburn Observer, and we're going to talk with David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Press Row about everything going on in the SEC.
Yep, so looking forward to that, but we're out of time here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.